Hi, this is Jack Kurtz, a photojournalist in Bangkok, Thailand, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 33. Who determines who's professional and who is not? In this episode, France takes on thin models and photo manipulation. Sigma's CEO thinks Sony will be the major player in the photo industry. Would you buy a Star Wars-themed camera bag? A drone nearly takes out an Olympic silver medalist. And listener Ed in Pennsylvania wants to know when you're considered a professional and what to charge. All that and more in episode 33 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Jack, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it. Jack Kurtz is an award-winning photojournalist and documentary photographer, formerly with the Arizona Republic, and he's now based in Thailand and shoots for Zuma Press, covering politics, social issues, and more in Southeast Asia. To check out his work, visit jackkurtzphotography.com. That's Kurtz with a Z. Today's show is going to be a little bit shorter, of course, since it's the holidays and there's less news to report, but I wanted to make sure that there was still an episode for you guys to enjoy nonetheless. Hey, I don't mind working the holidays. I love what I do, and I'm so thankful that you guys are all listening out there. I hope you all enjoyed spending time with your families and didn't gorge too much on ham or whatever you guys ate. It's icy and cold here in Idaho, but I'm nice and warm in my office, so I really can't complain now, can I? And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 33 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Paris has long been one of the centers of the fashion world, and as such, has been associated with really super thin models. Women, a handful of sizes smaller than your average woman, especially in recent years. So you might be surprised to hear that a law designed to combat anorexia in fashion modeling and unrealistic body images in fashion photography would be coming out of France. And yet it has. Dubbed the skinny model ban, the law, which was introduced back in March of 2015, has passed, and it requires that in order to work, thin models must first present a doctor's note stating that they are healthy and that their body mass index, also known as BMI, is over 18. Companies who break this rule face up to 6 months in jail and fines of up to 75,000 euros. That's roughly $82,000 US currently. But where things are really going to get interesting is in advertising photos, as this new law requires digitally manipulated photos to include disclosures stating that editing was done on them. The words retouched photograph or photograph edited must appear on photos in which the model was made to appear smaller or larger, or there's a fine of 37,000 euros, which is approximately $41,000 US, or 30% of the expenses that went into creating the ad. I'm guessing probably whichever is higher. The European country estimates that there are approximately 30 to 40,000 people living in France who deal with anorexia, and that 20% of women at some time in their lives have restricted their food intake to stay smaller. The bill says, quote, "The images of the body rewarding excessive thinness or wasting and stigmatizing curves undeniably contribute to the unhappiness, especially among many young girls. But the appearance of some models helps to spread potentially dangerous stereotypes for fragile populations," end quote. So this is a big deal in the advertising and the photo world. I think we're going to see this spread throughout Europe and the United States eventually. People of the world are bigger than ever. Probably too big, of course. We could probably all go on a diet and be healthier. But the models that you see on the fashion runways and in the magazines are ridiculously thin. And I think most of us can agree with that. No one looks like that in reality. Well, comparatively few, of course. So it's no wonder that little girls think that anything other than being stick thin is unacceptable. How can they not, right? That's all they see being portrayed as beautiful. And I'm doing air quotes here. If all you see on the covers of magazines and inside them are skinny models, it makes sense that you'd see yourself as being flawed somehow. So this law is a big step in helping to change that, but it's going to take time, of course. Everyone's got to be on board with it. Over on our site, reader Rob Elliott says, quote, "This is totally discriminatory towards naturally thin models. I don't disagree in principle, but in practice, it isn't fair to many models who are perfectly fit but are naturally thin. Given that many are 18 to 20 years of age, it eliminates a career option just because they have a naturally high metabolism." End quote. Now, I see what Rob is saying here, and I don't completely disagree. But the flip side is that the industry has been discriminatory towards models who aren't thin, right? I mean, don't those models have a right to work too? They actually look a lot more like the readership of the magazines anyhow. Magazines that have increasingly smaller circulation, I might add. So maybe if they put more realistic models on the cover, they might actually sell more of those darn things. Now, reader Captain Dash says, quote, "What about banning all leading male actors from getting ripped while their roles are not about fighting? Every romantic leading man who plays an accountant has giant arms and a six-pack now. People act like skinny females are the only ones to get influence in any way and are just too dumb and stupid to learn about healthy lifestyles. I think it's really patronizing to women, to be honest. I don't really have a problem with them saying someone was resized in Photoshop. I'm not crazy about it, though. But to ban skinny humans from having their pictures taken for a magazine is insane." End quote. Okay, he makes some pretty good points there. But hey, if a particular magazine is only running stick-thin models on the cover month after month, then it's kind of obvious what they're all about. And I would say the same if all you saw on the cover were obese models. So maybe there's a happy middle ground here. How about models of all or at least more reasonable sizes, not the extremes? Maybe that would be a good thing. According to Sigma CEO Kazuto Yamaki, Sony will be the major player in the photo industry. His company has done an amazing job in recent years of improving the quality of its lenses and other products, particularly with its Art series and its Sport series as well. I own one of each, and they are really top-notch. Taiwanese website Mobile01 published a video interview with the CEO of the privately owned Sigma, in which he believes that we're going to see Sony emerge as the dominant force in the industry. He was asked what he thought about the rise of Sony, to which he replied, quote, "Sony has a sensor technology. To us, it is very clear that Sony will be the major player in the photo industry because they have sensor technology. In order to differentiate the products, the sensor and the lens are the most important. Other things can be shared by other companies. I think in the photo industry, whoever has a good technology of making good sensor and lens could survive." End quote. He also states that this is why Sigma acquired Foveon and its stack sensor technology. Now, we'll see if his predictions come true. Sony had just 13% of interchangeable lens camera sales in 2014, and the numbers aren't out yet, of course, for 2015. And while Sony is absolutely killing it out there, to be the major player in the industry, a lot would have to happen. I mean, I'm talking a lot. Now, it may happen eventually, but for this to come to fruition, Nikon would have to go out of business and Canon would continue to have to lose market share to Sony. And that's just not likely to happen anytime soon. You can bet that the big two camera makers are going to do everything they can to make sure that this does not happen. You know, competition is great. We all win that way. A strong Sony means better products coming out of Canon and Nikon. That is good for everyone. Mark my words, 2016 is going to be a big, big year in the photo industry, a pivotal year. Exciting stuff is on its way, and there are going to be a lot of shakeups, no doubt about it. And of course, we'll cover it all for you right here on the podcast. Two unlikely worlds have collided, Star Wars and photography. Yeah, I think you guys see where this is going. Two camera bags currently available from ThinkGeek are definitely geared to the hardcore Star Wars fan. I think they're a statement that you love Star Wars more than photography, actually. And that's okay, if that's what you're into. One bag is based on Darth Vader and the other the giant Wookiee known as Chewbacca. You know, I think Darth would air choke anyone using his bag. That is just a guess. Both bags have 360 degrees of padding, three adjustable padded dividers to customize the layout inside, and there's also a utility section for storing things like your phone, a pen, and memory cards. Of the bags, ThinkGeek, which I personally love, it's a great site with a lot of cool gadgets, says, quote, "Store all your necessities for getting the shot of that galaxy far, far away, or right around the corner. Each section closes with zippers, but there's also a single master flap that you can close over the zippered section with magnetic buckles in case you need to move in a hurry to get the shot." End quote. Now, the Vader bag is black and silver, while the Chewbacca is Wookiee color, and its strap resembles that of the utility belt slung around him bandolier style. I know, right? Now, what I actually like about these bags, unlike many others out there, is they're not black on the inside. You know, it's nearly impossible to find some of your gear, which for many of us is actually black, inside a bag that's black inside. The Vader bag is red inside, and the Chewbacca one is sort of a tan, so that's definitely helpful for finding your gear. If either of these sound like something you'd love to own, head on over to thinkgeek.com where you can find them for about $50 a piece. Now, I'm going to go see the new Star Wars movie, but that's as far as I go. These bags, they're just not for me. Today's listener question comes from Ed in Pennsylvania, who emailed his question to me at lenshark@gmail.com. He writes, "Sharky, let me start by saying that your podcast is the best. I have all the episodes downloaded and I listen to them in my car. My question is, how is a professional photographer determined? Some articles I read stated that once you start selling your photos, you are a professional. Other articles stated that you have to have X number of years before you can call yourself a professional. We know it's not the gear that makes a pro." Thank you so much for your question, Ed. There's really no set guidelines for this, and if anyone tells you otherwise, they're just tricking you. If you asked 100 people, you'd probably get 100 different answers on this. But for me, I feel like if you're consistently being hired to shoot, or maybe you have photos available, I don't know, of flowers or landscapes or whatever, and people are frequently buying those, and you take your photography seriously and conduct yourself in a professional manner, then in my book, you're a professional. But honestly, it really doesn't matter. I don't feel like one has to be in the business for X number of years or make more money with their photography than their day job to be considered a professional. I think it has to do more with how you conduct yourself and the quality of your work. And even then, that's not necessarily the definition. And ultimately, does it really matter how one is labeled? I don't think it does. If you're charging for your work, people are going to view you as a professional. If you feel like you're doing quality work, feel like you take the profession seriously, aim to get better, etc., then call yourself a professional, I say. And if those who do it full-time have a problem with that, that's fine. The industry has changed. There are many, many more photographers in the business now. Same pie, but it's divvied up into a lot smaller pieces. And that bugs a lot of people. But it's a completely different industry now, and I think that people need to get over that. There are many thousands of photographers who are shooting part-time to supplement their income, and they're as professional as anyone else who is doing it full-time. Now remember, here in the United States at least, the IRS considers you professional if you're making money. In other words, make sure that you're paying your taxes. And also, don't forget about business licenses and anything else you may need in your location. A large percentage of photographers are making money with their photography, but aren't paying their taxes. So if you're charging for your work, you must pay your taxes and stay on top of that. And that's one of the signs of being professional, I think. So Ed also had a follow-up question. He asks, "How do I go about setting up a pricing structure? Do I call other photographers and see what they are charging? Do I ask for prices like I'm a potential client? Do I charge what I think is fair for my neck of the woods?" Those are some great questions, Ed, and people struggle with those, frankly. One thing you don't want to do is to talk to other photographers and amongst yourselves decide what your pricing should be. That's called price fixing, and here in the United States, it's illegal. But there's nothing wrong with seeing what others in your area charge and setting your prices accordingly. They've done the heavy lifting for you and have already seen what the market will bear. There's no use in reinventing the wheel, right? You also don't want to come in too high and have people think that you're crazy. And you definitely don't want to come in too low and have people think you're crazy for charging next to nothing. They also view your work as maybe not being as good. Conversely, you charge a lot, people think it's worth more. But you can only do that in certain circumstances. So it's important to make sure that you're charging a reasonable price. But that said, if your work is amazing and the difference is clear, you may be able to distinguish yourself in the marketplace by charging more and going after higher-end clients. But the key here is having amazing work. I mean, we're talking really exceptional work. We're talking about the kind of work that people are blown away by, work that sets itself apart from others in your marketplace. You can't charge more just because, you know, those people that have more money available to spend on photography are going to require stellar results. What I would suggest is searching out all the photographers in your area, find their websites, and see what they charge. Some may have their pricing listed, others are not going to. I think that these days, it's important to have pricing on your website. People are so used to going online and finding the info they need. And if they don't find it, they're just going to move along to someone else who does. However, if you can't find anybody in your area who's listing their pricing, find an area that's similar in size to yours and see what they're charging. Now, sure, you could always call or email other photographers in your area pretending to be a potential client, but that always rubs me the wrong way because you're wasting someone else's time. So I always recommend going online and seeing what others are charging instead. Now, of course, just because you see what others are charging doesn't mean that they're actually getting that. Many will list their prices and they will discount it to make ends meet or to keep their dance card full. Dance card. Talk about an old-timey reference, right? My fellow old folks are laughing right now, but you get the idea. If you want to keep the money coming in, sometime you have to discount your rates. And that is up to each individual photographer. But you don't want to discount them too much, otherwise people think you're, you know, the Walmart of photography. You want to be a little bit more higher end than Walmart. Thank you so much for your questions, Ed. I greatly appreciate it, and I hope that helps you out. Work on your website, see what others are charging, go ahead and list your prices, and don't be afraid to discount a little bit if you need to. It's going to be up to you what you charge, and you're going to see what the market will bear. You might want to charge $1,000 for a shoot and a print package and only be able to get $500. The closer you are to the bigger cities, the more you're going to be able to get, of course. If you're out there in the sticks, out in the countryside, you're not going to be getting as much. But of course, maybe your expenses will be lesser too. Let me know how it goes. I'd be interested to see how you're doing. If you'd like to have your question answered here on the podcast, go ahead and hit petapixel.com/podcast and look for our voicemail widget, or you can email me at lensshark@gmail.com. One thing you're definitely not expecting to see while watching downhill skiing on television is a camera drone fall out of the sky and nearly take out a world champion skier. Well, that's exactly what happened this past week in Italy, as Olympic silver medalist Marcel Hirscher of Austria was on his second slalom run. The sizable drone was carrying a fairly heavy broadcast camera as it crashed to the ground with great force just as Hirscher passed under it. Later, the skier told Associated Press, quote, "This is horrible. This can never happen again. This can be a serious injury," end quote. It took the International Ski Federation mere hours to announce, though, that it was banning the use of camera drones due to safety concerns. According to sports marketing agency Infront, who was in charge of the drone, their initial investigation leads them to believe that the drone became disabled due to, quote, "strong and unforeseen interference on the operating frequency, leading to limited operability." The pilot followed the official security procedure, purposely flying the drone as close as possible to the ground before releasing it. The aim was to destroy the drone in order to prevent it from losing control. End quote. Well, they nearly destroyed it on a world champion skier is what they did. Kirscher expressed his concern about what could have happened, saying, quote, "I am very relieved that nothing happened. You don't want to think about what could have happened when 10 kilograms are coming down 20 meters. That would have been a very serious, bad injury. There are a lot of cool things nowadays, but you have to guarantee the safety, and that was just insane," end quote. So doing the conversion here, that's a 22-pound object falling from a height of a 6-story building. Yeah, that would definitely have hurt, and you never know, that might have even killed. I get that they want to have cool visuals for the TV audience at home. It's all about money, of course, right? But clearly it's too dangerous to be using camera drones at skiing events. Now, the race director was quite ticked off, apparently, because he alleges that the drone pilot did not follow instructions and was to fly 15 meters away from the racer. That's some 50 feet or so. If he would have done so, of course, he would have been nowhere near Kirscher as he made his way down the mountain. The lesson here, camera drones are really cool, but clearly they shouldn't be flown over or near people, as even an experienced drone pilot can barely keep them from hurting someone. So I think after this incident, you're going to see them banned at many sporting events. And that's not a bad thing. These ginormous drones could hurt somebody. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 33 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm LensShark. That's L-E-N-S-S-H-A-R-K. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 34. our very last episode of 2015. Well, it's f8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.